I'm Charlie Dent. I'm here with Phil Morgan-Rees. We're from Milford's Private Wealth and Advice Service. And Phil, we're here to talk about the two biggest questions on retirees' lips. So what are those questions in particular?
Yeah, thanks, Charlie. Well, the average age of our wealth management client is 67. And the most important issue for them relates to whether the assets they've accumulated over their lifetime will continue to last and provide them with the spending they need and the spending they want. So put simply, it's how much will I need and do I have enough?
And how would someone kick that process off and start to think about how much it is they are going to need in retirement?
It really depends. But the key thing to take away is it can be managed, and we're managing these things for clients like them all the time. So the three things I would say to start with. The first one is identify what you expect your cash flows to be, whether they be regular cash flows or spending, I should say, or ad hoc spending. And break it down and try and understand it. And then once you've figured that out, then it's a case of taking all of your assets, because in this day and age, we tend to find that people decumulate a range of assets. And then you model how you fulfill that spending with the assets you've got at hand. And thirdly, don't forget to add in any income streams that you have. So, you know, underpinning anyone's income in New Zealand is the lifetime annuity, the New Zealand superannuation, which is payable to all those eligible from 65 for their life.
Okay. And so you talk about three key areas there: spending, assets, and income. Can you break those down a bit further for us, starting off with spending? What are the approaches to going about working out how much we're going to spend in retirement?
Yep. Well, one approach is to look at what you expect your regular commitments to be, and then try and identify your baseline for doing the things that you want to do, or doing the things that you really expect to do. But bear in mind, there are different phases. There's research that shows there are typically three phases of spending in retirement. The initial phase, and that may be where individuals are either not working or working less, they fill in more of their time with leisure activities. So what's evident during these early years is there's a higher level of spending. And that's because people are taking holidays, they may be taking big adventures that they've set their heart on, or it may just be a case of visiting kids that don't live nearby. So as time passes then, spending tends to reduce, the pace of life is quieter. Very often we see clients involved in voluntary work. And then you have the later stage, or the last stage, where care costs can become a meaningful part of the spend. So it's worth understanding, and this isn't to frighten people, it's just some statistics to get a feel for the numbers that might be needed. Personal healthcare spending for over 65s is five times it is for a child and 2.5 times what it is for an under 65. And typically, around about 50% of your full lifetime care spending takes place in the last 4 years.
Wow. Yeah, that's really interesting. And beyond the regular elements, are there other elements that people need to be thinking about in terms of that expenditure?
Yeah, we see it break down into two areas. The first area is those with families and children.
Sure.
And what we have started to see more and more of more recently is people wanting to experience the joy of giving during their lifetime. So instead of leaving it till the end. And what we have seen is we now have up to three generations of clients from the same family where they want to start their children or their grandchildren off in the investing journey, and we can open accounts for them, whether that be in wealth management or through our unit trust investment funds or through KiwiSaver, which is really popular. And then the second example could be from the same group, but it's really for people who are interested in developing a giving strategy or interested in philanthropy and those who want to donate to good causes. But the main point, whatever the spending approach is to pool all the known and desired spending plans. Mm-hmm. So whether it's regular, ad hoc, whether it's to do with children and bequests, whether it's to do with a giving strategy or philanthropy, and then convert them all into cash flows so you can model and start to map what your likely spending is going to be over the period.
And I'll pick up on just something you said right at the end there. So the period.
Yep.
How do people figure out what that period is going to be?
Excellent question. Everything we're talking about is uncertain. So we don't know how long we're planning for. We don't know what's going to happen in investment markets. And if we think about enemy number one in some respects, we don't know how severe inflation is going to be through that term that we're talking about. But the reality is we can work on all of them. And as I said at the outset, these things can be managed. You know, we can manage all of them. And while we can't create certainty, because no one can, what we can do is come up with a plan and a review process which creates as much certainty and optionality as we can. And what we observe is that clients of ours who've gone through this process and can visualize how things are going to work out start to feel more in control.
Yeah. Yeah. And before we leave the spending element,
yep.
Is there anything else in that kind of area that we need to consider whilst we're thinking about these things?
Yeah, well, a couple of things. I'd quite like to drill a little bit more into how long, because the objective term for how long we're planning for is actually called the planning age. And that's the point at which you're no longer, I suppose, spending money, probably apart from your funeral costs.
I understand.
There are some guidelines available, but remember, with all of these things, treat them as guidelines. Let's take the first one regarding the planning age, life expectancy. So somebody turning 65 today in New Zealand, a male, has an expected life expectancy of 86 and a female 88. But actually, let's look at that term. Life expectancy is an average. So it's almost certain that it won't be that age that is your actual age. It's an average. So you have to look at your own circumstances and overlay those components, such as family history, other health indicators, to come up with the right period for you. So in our experience, it's not uncommon for individuals turning 50 to be planning for between 20 and 32 years. So, you know, quite a span. And, you know, we have to think about that age 65. We identify it as a retirement age, but the notion of retirement at 65 has been around for a long, long time. Mm. You know, 65 was established as the date in the States in 1935, which is almost 90 years ago. Germany, it was 1916. In the UK, it was 1946. And you got an idea when it was in New Zealand?
I'm going to take a stab and say 1915.
Nope. The Progressive Liberal Government of the 1890s introduced the Old Age Pension Act 1898.
Wow.
So in New Zealand, the age 65 was first identified back in the 19th century, okay? It's moved around a lot between then and now. But let's even think about that. Life expectancy in New Zealand in 1950 was 67 for a male. So the expectation was, on average, you'd be 2 years in retirement. Mm. So, you know, we've got to start to think about retirement as a different period and a long period. And 65 is a lot younger than it used to be in some respects, okay? So in 1898, by the way, he was 56. So there weren't many people who were likely to pick up the Social Security payment at age 65. And that life expectancy date is moving. You know, data recently out of Australia said that the life expectancy term has increased by 5 years over the last 20. So, you know, if you're thinking of 65, you're likely to be thinking about quite a long period in time. Mm. And, you know, my guide of 20 to 32, you know, that probably will be the case for many, many people.
Yeah, I dread to think what it's like by the time I get there, but something to think about. And so one last question before we leave spending.
Yep.
I think there's a potential thief in the night there, and that's a word you dropped in, which was inflation.
Yep.
How does that factor into the picture?
Yeah, look, we can't leave spending without turning our minds to inflation. Now, I suppose there's been a little bit of a risk of us getting a bit complacent in New Zealand. If we go back to 2016, inflation was less than 1%. For the next 3 years, it was less than 2% per annum. So when you look at the cumulative impact of that, it would be something in the region of 6.7%, and therefore your purchasing power was impacted by 6%, which isn't a big number. It's noticeable,
sure,
but not really big. Now, you look at the period between Q1 2020 and Q1 2024, the cumulative effect is quite a different story. It's over 19%, which means the purchasing power impact over those that four-year period has been 16%.
Yeah.
So really speaking, you know, that difference matters, and making sure we're accounting for inflation is really, really important, which at Milford, of course, we back a diversified portfolio of shares and bonds to make sure that over time we beat inflation and other alternatives such as term deposits.
Yeah, so important. And so we move on to assets, Phil. And when you're talking about assets, are you talking about savings and investments specifically?
So that's one area, but if we think about it practically, we see clients coming to us where they have, yes, they have savings and investments, but also they may well have other assets that they're looking to pool as part of this longer term plan. That could be a rental property, which they will think to dispose of at some point. It could be shares in a business. It could be a business, or it could be their main residence. So all of those assets are potential assets to decumulate. The main point, of course, is to go through the process of identifying which assets are you going to use to convert to cash flows at which time. So over and above the income you're expecting, how are you going to use those assets? And so we see clients coming to us, they may want more of a passive income, for example, and so compared with managing a rental property, a portfolio of shares and bonds is a passive income. You know, effectively, we do the work, and then the clients will then draw on the proceeds in place of the income that they once had. The point to consider, though, is, you know, pooling the assets that are available to you and then figuring out when you want to use those as part of your long-term plan to meet the spending we identified when we looked at those three areas of spending.
So look holistically across your entire asset base and really think about it.
Absolutely. And it may be a case of weighing up the pros and cons of which assets and when.
Sure. And so that leaves us with income. What are we thinking about in the income space?
Well, in an ideal world, we'd all have plenty of income all the way through to our planning age, and that would be easy, but life isn't like that. So one challenge we have is that we don't know the date. So we need to build in some certainty into having enough for what we need and what we want to do. So underpinning it, I said at the start, is NZ superannuation, which is a universal payment for New Zealand citizens and residents who are over 65 or older for life. There are some changes coming in July, and you can have a look at the work and income website for those. But once you take account of that, beyond that, we're pretty much on our own to figure it out. So many people in New Zealand continue to work after the age of eligibility. Yeah. It's actually a bit of a standout feature in New Zealand, really. So quite notably, New Zealand has a high proportion of people over 65 who are still working. The percentage is around 24%. Wow. Now that's quite high when you compare with Australia, that's 12, and much, much higher than the UK, where it's only 10%. And in fact, in the age 65 to 69, 44% of people are still working. So as a baseline, there's the NZ superannuation and any other income for those working after 65. But then once you've established that baseline, it's then a case of putting your assets together and the spending together and identifying any gaps. And in the case of those gaps, how big they are and which bits of saving and investing, sale of assets or downsizing fill those gaps.
Sure. Look, to me, it's sounding a little bit complex now, putting all those pictures together.
Yeah.
What's an easy way to actually look at that and get that done?
Well, it depends if it's complex or not. But that's where an advisor can step in and help and model these variables and look at different variations. But let's clarify something up front. You know, when you're modeling something, all you're doing is estimates. You're estimating the life expectancy. You're estimating what something will sell for. But it really is a good process of getting some control and visualizing. And I think it was Eisenhower was famous for saying that the process of planning is more important than the plan itself. So it really is a case of trying to get more control over what's happening by visualizing it and then looking at different options. It's creating a greater degree of certainty.
Okay. And so how does that modeling work really for us? Like, what does it look like?
Good modeling involves a range of options. Yeah, good modeling involves sitting down and working through some what ifs. What if we were to do this then? What if we were to do this at a different time? And looking at the options of which assets can accommodate the spending. You know, what if for some it's, what if I help the kids now? And, you know, our challenge would be, well, what can you sensibly afford to do? And it's looking at those options. So good modeling involves looking at a range of options as to how you could use those assets you've accumulated and convert them into cash flows.
And we know that the planning age is a known unknown.
Yep.
You know, life expectancy is a known unknown. What about investment markets? Surely they factor in as another known unknown in the big picture.
Yes. No one can predict the future. There is a famous New York Yankees baseball coach, Yogi Berra, who's got this gorgeous turn of phrase that says, it's tough to make predictions, especially about the future. But we derive a lot of information from what's happened. You know, so we talked inflation earlier, and I made the point that we back a diversified portfolio of shares and bonds. And certainly we do that, but then what we need to work with is that that involves a trade-off, and it doesn't come alone. One challenge is that we have volatility. And volatility can spook people. Volatility is the price we pay for higher potential returns. We have to remember that. And what's been researched is that our sensitivity to volatility increases in retirement, you know, fivefold. So individuals have a sensitivity to volatility and to prices going down. There's a concept called loss aversion. Loss aversion increases fivefold in retirement. So really it does involve making sure that you're fully informed as to what you're doing and that you can actually sleep at night. We've been through quite a challenging period in 2022 and 23. But if you look at the performance over the last 12 months, it's been really good.
Okay.
So you have to tolerate that volatility and those challenging periods to reap the rewards over time.
So psychology really plays a part of it.
Yep. But it's also important, equally important to remember, you know, at the outset I said we're investing over probably a 20 to 30 year time frame.
Yeah.
So that should really inform how you look at what's happening day by day, month by month, even year by year. I'm not advocating being hands off, but I am advocating looking over the long term and making sure that you're seeing what's happening in context of your overall plan.
Yeah.
A carefully thought through investment strategy, you know, focused on your goals with options fully considered and your appetite for volatility baked in is really important.
Yeah.
It's no good, we have to be realistic, it's no good saying, yeah, I could tolerate a 30% drop in the value of my portfolio if you can't sleep at night. So you've got to be realistic about that.
But pulling it all together does genuinely sound a bit complex to me. It's got me a bit worried from what you've been saying. Where do we go from here?
That wasn't my intention. The intention was to outline there are these many areas, but as I said at the start, it is possible to manage it, and we manage it all the time. I mean, we manage it for clients. We've been managing clients in this phase since 2004. Mm. So it is very manageable. All good advisors can take you through a good process of identifying what the issues are that you need to consider and how they can be drawn together, how they can be modeled, and how they manifest themselves in a long-term plan. As I said, it's not a set and forget process. It's really one to establish a good plan, a good strategy, and review over time. Because of course, we don't know what's going to happen. Unexpected things happen. You know, you can't model something that's unexpected because it's unexpected.
And when do you recommend people actually start this planning phase?
Yep.
Pre-retirement.
Well, I would say if we're using 65 as an anchor, it's good to really be focused on this from 55 onwards. But, you know, any time is a good time to start. But 55 onwards, so in terms of net wealth in New Zealand, the age cohort with the largest wealth is that 55 to 64. So I'd be encouraging people in that age cohort to be thinking about these issues. But frankly, it's never too late to start. And, you know, we often, as you know, Charlie, do client surveys, and this is the number one topic.
It is.
We survey our clients who are in this age group, and the clients in this age group tell us the most important thing, will my assets last my lifetime? The second most important thing is, how do I get the right retirement income strategy from my accumulated assets? And then, of course, intergenerational wealth transfer is becoming a more and more important feature of our clients' minds. And then last but not least, how they can get a giving strategy together and participate in philanthropy.
Absolutely. And let's wrap it up. So we started off with the question, how much do I need?
Yep.
How will I know it's going to last?
Yep.
How would you summarize the answer to those two questions?
I'd really say it depends. There are a lot of unknowns, but I'd say it can be managed and people manage it all the time. I would say have a good plan in place. Make sure you think through all of your options and then review. And plan also means plan for yourself. You know, what we are seeing more and more in New Zealand is cognitive decline in later stages. So a plan needs to be robust and needs to stand the test of time to ensure it does all the things for you.
Yeah. So don't be afraid to start.
Absolutely.
And we're here to help.
Yep.
And so the advice to anyone is get started, pick up the phone, give our advisors a call.
Yep.
You can reach out to us on the 0800 number, so 0800 662 347, and speak to one of the team. There's no obligation, just have a chat and get to know the advisor, start to think about the planning. How much do you need? Is it going to last?
Yeah, perfect.
Thanks for listening. Be sure to follow us for more insights, tips, and market commentary from our financial experts here at Milford. And if you liked what you heard, please leave us a review. An important disclaimer: everything we talk about in this podcast should not be considered financial advice. It is information only. If you need financial advice, speak to a financial advisor. If you want more information or to see our product disclosure statements, you can visit our website at milfordasset.com.